Who's been watching the Winter Olympics? Oh, yeah, well, a few. Yeah, I think the Winter Olympics are fun because it's people doing things that I would never ever do. I mean, it's not just like they're doing something that you could do a little bit, but they do really, really well, you know, like running and jumping and stuff. The stuff that actually is just complete insanity. The speed skating last night, anyone see the speed skating? How close are those guys to each other with, you know, blades like this? And something about the skill in which they managed to do that, well, accidents do happen because there were a couple yesterday, but they get so close to each other and somehow, most of the time, they all get to the end. One of the things that struck me as I was watching that last night was the sense in which their eyes were just fixed on I don't know what, because it's a very short oval they were going around. I guess the next turn, I was always taught riding motorcycles, you always look right into the vanishing point of the next corner. Maybe they do the same kind of thing on speed skates, I don't know. But you're doing that right up against someone else. And if you're at the back, if you're at the back, then you've got to somehow look through the person that's in your way. Otherwise, chaos happens. One person goes down, they all go down. And as I say, when they trip over, there's you know, lots of sharp bits of metal involved as well. So astonishing, really, the skills that they do that. The vision that takes, you get the connection. There's a needed vision to draw their attention. And this Living Our Vision series starts across the nation, not just here. This idea which we together, all expressions of the Salvation Army, are focusing on this single vision. Now, you can be cynical about these things. I know, because I can also be cynical about these things. It's a statement on a poster, and we've seen statements on posters before. But the trick is to look past that, not to a statement, but to actually what's underlying it. I didn't plan to start like that, so I've no idea where I am. Let's start by reminding ourselves what it is. Next one, please, Stacey. So Lyndall's already introduced this to the young people. We're part of that too. Wherever there is hardship or injustice, Salvos, that's everybody, however your connection to the Salvation Army is defined, will live, love, and fight. They're the important words. Alongside others to transform Australia one life at a time with the love of Jesus. It is underlined, and I hope that's no accident by the designers, but Jesus underpins the whole thing. Because I will say more than once in this next few weeks, the vision is not the sentence. That's important. But the vision is Jesus. The vision is always Jesus. And in this process of orientating our thinking around this national vision, we are reminded, and we will be reminded, it is all about Jesus. The vision is Jesus. Dangerously, obsessively, undeniably Jesus, says Pete Gregg in one of my favorite poems. And if we are captivated by Jesus in that way, then all of that stuff above that line, we will just live out. But over these next few weeks, we are going to unpack and explore this a little bit more. As I said at the beginning, today is also Transfiguration Sunday in the church calendar. So let's read about that. So Mark's Gospel, chapter 9. Mark's Gospel, chapter 9, and I'm starting at verse 2. So Mark's Gospel, chapter 9, verse 2. Six days later, Jesus took Peter, James, and John. So, 6 days after what? You might reasonably ask. 6 days after Jesus had been teaching about his own death and the meaning of his own coming to earth. 6 days later, Jesus took Peter, James, and John and led them up a high mountain to be alone. As the men watched, Jesus' appearance was transformed, and his clothes became dazzling white, far whiter than any earthly bleach could ever make them. Then Elijah and Moses appeared and began talking with Jesus. Peter exclaimed, "Rabbi, it's wonderful for us to be here. Let's make three shelters as memorials, one for you, one for Moses, and one for Elijah." He said this because he didn't really know what else to say, for they were all terrified. Then a cloud overshadowed them, and a voice from the cloud said, "This is my dearly loved son. Listen to him." Suddenly, when they looked around, Moses and Elijah were gone, and they saw only Jesus with them. As they went back down the mountain, he told them not to tell anyone what they had seen until the Son of Man had risen from the dead. So they kept it to themselves, but they often asked each other what he meant by rising from the dead. This is the good news about Jesus for us. Now, if you're ever tempted to think that the Gospels are somehow fabricated, I love these stories of disciples at their moments of weakness, disciples kind of blundering about. I think we've all had those moments, some more than others, of not knowing what to say and so saying something that just doesn't quite fit the moment. And here's poor Peter. He gets this amazing vision of Jesus in all his divine splendor. And Peter, like many of us, is incapable of remaining silent in the face of awe, but has to say something. And so he says, "I know, we'll build three shelters." Because that's the kind of thing you want to do when you have a vision of the glory of God, isn't it? It's to get the hammer and the nails out and start building stuff. And he was a fisherman. Building stuff for him was probably a hobby rather than a job. Anyway, I don't know. But I love these stories about blundering disciples. A, because I'm a blundering disciple, and if you're honest, maybe so are you. But also because if these stories were somehow fabricated after the event, and they are written after the event, it's probably Peter dictating his story to Mark. And Mark's one of the earliest Gospels. By this time, you see, when Peter's telling his stories, he's an elderly man, he's a great leader in the church, he's a leader of men, he is the guy. So if you're telling your story, you'd be tempted, wouldn't you, to just gloss over the dodgy bits, and he would kind of rewrite that to say, "Well, you know, I saw Jesus in his divine splendor, and I just worshipped in silence and went on my way." But no, he's honest. And we get lots of those in the Gospels, where people are where the disciples are honest about their failings. I love that, because it gives the human touch to the whole thing. It allows me to connect with the story because I'm a blundering disciple too. So Jesus has his disciples that he teaches, and he's got the 12. We read about the 12 a lot, and he gives them a lot of teaching. And then there are times when he's teaching whole crowds, and then he takes the 12 away and says, "Now what? Should we just go into that in a bit more detail?" But within the 12, he's got the group of three, Peter, James, and John. These are the three that he knows are going to be the leaders of the church after the resurrection, after the coming of the Spirit. So these are the three that he takes aside, and they get a little bit extra teaching. It's a very good discipleship model for the church. We really ought to try it sometime. Anyway, so he takes the three, and they go up the mountain, and they have this amazing experience. And it's one of those stories that's difficult to understand. And the gospel writers, they don't explain everything. We went up the mountain with Jesus, we saw this, and then we were told not to say anything about it, and we came down, and we wondered about it. And actually, if you read on in Mark's gospel, it gets even more comical, because they see Jesus in his splendor, they come down from the mountain, and there are other disciples who are left behind, and they're down the bottom of the mountain, and they're trying to heal somebody, and making the right stuff up of it. And so these disciples join these other disciples, and they're all making a terrible mess. I don't know about you, I find that comforting. Because it's Jesus that is the focal point, and it's only when we actually rely on him that things make sense. Peter sees Jesus in his splendor, and Elijah and Moses are there as well. They're there because the two great prophets of Israel, whose work had kind of, in ways that we can look back on and now make sense of, had led up to this moment. It was always about the final coming of Jesus to rescue and recreate the world. And Peter's response is, well, we'll build three shelters. We want to try and capture the moment. We want to kind of stay in this place. We don't want to lose this moment, because the reality is that mountaintop experiences can't stay that way. They had to go down the mountain and deal with what was down there. And when you and I have mountaintop spiritual experiences, we can't stay there either. We have to go back to our reality. I hope and pray you're going to have a mountaintop spiritual experience this morning if you haven't already had it. But at the end of the day, you will have to go back to your reality, and so will I. I reckon if this had happened in the days of the mobile phone, there wouldn't have been shelters being talked about. Master, let's grab a selfie. And then you can see it on Instagram. Hashtag transfiguration goals. Hashtag discipleship. All that kind of stuff. Because we are people who just want to capture moments and hang on to them. And Peter wants to hang on to this moment. Maybe for him, somehow, there's this moment, brief moment of clarity as to who this is, who Jesus is. But the voice comes. Next one, please, Stacey. I couldn't get away from this verse in my own preparation this week. Amidst all that would distract, and I've had a few this week, amidst all that would distract, the voice of the Father rings out clearly. This is my Son whom I love. Listen to him. Clear away the distraction and listen to him. I don't think there's a better verse for a Living the Vision Sunday. And I don't think anyone actually knew that when they planned it. But that's just my private, that's private between us, okay? I didn't say that. And I'm not being recorded saying that, am I? No. Listen to him. This is my Son. See, the vision is Jesus. Obsessively, dangerously, undeniably Jesus. Peter, James, and John didn't get to stay in that moment of clarity, and neither do you and neither do I. But they left with a clear command from the Father to pay attention to the Son. Because of the resurrection, we too have a vision of the radiant Son. Maybe not in dazzling clothes of white, but we are enabled to catch a glimpse of his kingdom from time to time. In the moments when we encounter grace, when we're reminded of his mercy, when we slip up and the Spirit witnesses within us, convicts us, these are kingdom moments. When we share in meaningful conversation with someone, when we get to share in prayer with somebody, when we find that our conversation goes beyond the superficial and gets to the significant. When we get beyond talking about the Olympics and the weather and actually saying to someone, how are you traveling with Jesus? And they will give you an answer. And by the way, the walking group does that. We call it kingdom tables now. So I'm glad the picture of the walking group had them sat down at tables. Because the conversations are not superficial. And the relationships are significant. And those are the kingdom moments. The moments of accountability, the moments when someone who is hungry is fed, when an addicted person is freed, when injustices are put right, these are the signs of the kingdom. And what they all have in common is the eternal, unchanging love, grace, and mercy of the risen Lord Jesus. The vision is more than a card. The vision is Jesus, dangerously, undeniably, obsessively Jesus. And that's what I'm going to talk about for the next 5 or 6 weeks as we go through each of these lines. But vision's important. Next one, please. God's word to a people in exile was that he was going to rescue them. Their life after exile would not be the same as it was beforehand. The first thing the Bible teaches us about God is that he creates. He makes things. And one of the last things the Bible teaches about God is that he recreates. Isaiah 43, I'm doing a new thing. Revelation 21, the risen Jesus says, I am making all things new. You and I are invited into a resurrection adventure this side of eternity. Dare we believe that God might do a new thing in our day? Would we dare be a part of that, to see it, to envision it, to pray for it? God may well be doing a new thing, but you and I will miss it unless we pay attention to Jesus. Listen. Listen to him. We're reminded in Proverbs, next one please, where there is no vision, the people will perish. I like the New Living Translation take on that. When people do not accept divine guidance, they run wild. One of the other translations says they throw off restraint. And if you don't think that's true, just look around you at the life of our nation. People throw off restraint, don't they? Vision helps us stay on course, to move in the direction God wants for us, makes us make good decisions, reminds us of why we're doing what we're doing, helps us to say no in the right places. The power of vision is the ability to see and create the future you want. It challenges us with what is and how it could be. Challenges what is with what could be. And Doris Rendell, not knowing that she would write a song that would be appropriate to a Living the Vision Sunday in Newcastle in 2018, wrote, "We have caught the vision splendid of a world which is to be, when the pardoning love of Jesus freely flows from sea to sea, when all men from strife and anger, greed and selfishness are free, when the nations live together in sweet peace and harmony." The vision is Jesus. And the vision for the Salvation Army in Australia is about living, loving and fighting for the values of Christ's kingdom. The vision is Jesus. Here in Newcastle, our theme for this year, Flourish, reminds us to pray for, work for the human flourishing of everybody that comes into under our influence. And either way, it's still all about Jesus. Let's go back to Peter for a moment. Not Peter on the Transfiguration Mountain, but Peter in a stormy boat. Well, boats aren't stormy, lakes are stormy. Peter's in a boat on a stormy lake. We read about that earlier. And it's easy to give Peter a hard time, because he gets out of the boat. "Lord, if it's really you, call me to come to you." And he gets out of the boat and he walks. And so long as he keeps his eyes fixed on Jesus, he's okay. But the minute he looks down or looks at the waves or the storm around him, then he begins to sink. Then that beautiful prayer, "Lord, save me." And immediately, Jesus grabs hold of him. Never mind Peter. There were 11 disciples sat on the boat who didn't get out. We can talk about living the vision all we like, and we will, because we've been asked to. And obedience is important. Not just because we've been asked to, because it's important. We need to unify. We don't need to spend time looking at our problems this morning. We've been challenged not to do that, not to look at the distracting storms around, but to look at Jesus. The vision is Jesus. But you won't see storms or Jesus if you stay in a boat. Because I think there are 11 disciples sat in that boat, huddled up together. This is brave, tough fishermen, by the way. It's not the first time they've been in a boat in a storm, is it? For goodness sake. I would be being sick, but I don't do boats. The only reason I get into a boat is if the barrier reef's at the end of it. And then I'm coming back again. But these are fishermen, these are professional boat people. And they're huddling up, and they're not looking at Jesus, and they're not looking at the storm, they're just huddling up, and they're kind of, I don't know what's going on with them, but let's remember that Peter's the one who had the courage to step out in the first place. We can miss out on the whole thing if we stay in the boat. We can get out, we can walk towards Jesus, and we may well get distracted or blown off course, and we might even sink a bit. But we say, Lord, save us. We know you'll pull us back. And if you don't get out of the boat, that conversation never happens. Let's not miss out. The call of the Father is to listen to Jesus. The vision statement, the national vision statement, is a good one. It provides something for everyone who calls himself Salvo to unite around. But the vision is more than a sentence. I will say it again and you will get bored of hearing it, but we must grasp this. The vision is not the words. The vision is the word, Jesus. The vision is Jesus, dangerously, obsessively, undeniably Jesus. And if we are going to be captivated by who he is, then everything else on that statement will just naturally flow out of who we are and who he is making us to become. But if we hide away in the apparent safety of the boat, we will never make vision reality. For in the boat is both denial of reality of storms and reality of Jesus. The National Vision Statement is about Jesus. We do not proclaim ourselves. I read at the beginning from St. Paul's letter to Corinthians. We do not proclaim ourselves. We proclaim Jesus Christ as Lord. And so will you join me in hearing again the call of the Father? This is my Son, whom I love. Listen to him. So grab hold of that. Grab hold of a new national vision statement. But first of all, make sure you are stepping out of your boat of comfort. And make sure you are joining the resurrection adventure with Jesus, the Son, the Beloved. Listen to him.